I'm Fraser T. Smith, a music artist, record producer, musician and songwriter, and I've made an album called 12 Questions under the name Future Utopia. Each track on the record poses a deep philosophical question, and I've invited some of the sharpest minds in popular culture to answer these questions in order to help me and others navigate living in the modern world. In this episode, I welcome lead singer of the Kaiser Chiefs, actor, author, writer, presenter, artist, dad joke teller and rock god, Ricky Wilson, and the critically acclaimed Ivor Novello winning writer, singer and music artist, Mizey.
How are you, Mizey?
I'm good. I am feeling much better. You know those two gin and tonics?
Oh. Well, I think it's more like six.
Six gin and tonics. They kind of got to me when I got home. It hit me when I got home. And just the past weekend, I've just been trying to sober up, basically.
Are you feeling okay now?
Yeah, no, totally sober now.
Are you... Because I was thinking about this, Ricky. You were saying, and you'd done a brilliant spell of not drinking.
Yeah.
And then you came around to ours.
Yeah.
And offered... I just really wanted to have a glass of wine with you.
And I had one.
And you did, yeah.
It was nice.
Have you, because I've stopped drinking, because I, well, I'll tell you, went out on Easter Sunday, apparently got Peter Jones in a headlock, started singing Craig David songs to him, got back, Sarah said she needed to take her dress off, I got the scissors, cut it off, and then was violently ill, all over the floral curtains the next day. And I just thought, at 50 years of age, when your 21-year-old daughter comes into the room and just goes, Daddy, pull yourself together. You're a disgrace. Mm-hmm. I think, actually, I might have had to have gone out on a high or a low for my drinking career.
That's it then. Completely gone. You're going to stop.
I feel like I've had a great run up to the age of 50. And now I'd like to have, hopefully, my next 50 years.
Right, yeah.
But... just to see what happens.
All right, well, it's weird because it's easy until it's not. I mean, I went out the weekend and had a drink and it was good. And it's not worth it,
the drinking, because at the moment you can't dance. And if you can dance, then I think it's worth it.
Yeah.
But until you can dance again, it's quite easy at the moment. But like, anyway, it's up to you. I'm living like that because it was well hard when I gave up because I didn't want to become like the poster boy for giving up in case I didn't want to give up forever.
Yeah, because then you're going to feel really, you know, you're going to have that pressure, aren't you?
So if you say you're giving up, don't say you're giving up forever because then when you start again, there's always going to be another, you know, there's going to be an Easter Sunday, another Christian holiday for you to celebrate. And then you start taking liberties and using other holidays. You start getting into like really obscure religions because they have more holidays. And
that's
then you'll be there.
Yeah.
Just looking at, oh, it's Battle of the Boyne today.
There's always something.
Yeah.
Right. I wanted to introduce this episode of the podcast really simply, if I may. Because the thing is, Google is great for working out how many Ivor Novellos you've got between you and how many millions of records you sold between you and how you're both the future of culture and art. So Google's our friend for that. But for me, I have a bona fide soul queen on the podcast today and I have a bona fide rock god. Simple as that.
Is this your intro?
Yeah. Simple.
This is it?
Yeah.
Have you started?
Rock god, soul queen.
Okay.
Two people in front of me. I look at the screen.
We'll figure out who's who then.
Yeah, we're going to have to figure that
that's
out.
Not, that's unimportant. This is a podcast. We don't get to see you, but I can just tell you.
No, am I the soul queen or the rock god?
You're the soul queen.
Thank you.
Rock god.
Thank God for that.
I'm looking into my screen with glee. I was so looking forward to seeing both of your faces because, and you're going to say, you know, you could say, that cynical part of your brain could say, oh, he's going to say this about everyone that's on the podcast or everyone he works with. But you two are two of my favourite collaborators in music. Oh. And what happens is that you love collaborating with people and then you go, actually, should we have a drink? Should we talk weekly as we do, Mizey? Should we text each other jokes, Ricky, as we do? Should we when we do that next recording session, why don't you stay over and then we'll just... And then music merges into friendship and that, to me, is the finest thing about what we do.
Yeah.
And I just want to say I love you both.
Oh, that's very kind
of you.
We
love you too.
And I know we're going to talk about the 12 questions, but I do want to ask you both what your current favourite one-liner is.
Oh, you can't...
Come on, you're a comedian, Ricky. It's not putting you on the spot.
That's totally on the spot. I'm going to have to look at what I've written recently.
Mizey, you go first.
Honestly, I don't have one, but any dad joke is funny to me because they're so unfunny
funny. Don't talk to me about dads. Do not talk to me about dads, Mizey. My dad, he's always complaining. Yesterday, it was £3.50 for a cappuccino, £4.95 for a ham sandwich, 30p to go to the toilet. That's the last time I invited him around for Sunday lunch, honestly. We did see Elvis and B&Q yesterday, though.
Oh, God. That's not with you, isn't it?
Return to Sander.
Return to Sander. Very good to say, there you go. Nah, yeah, I can't do it under pressure.
Oh, come on.
No, because you're like, if you say Elvis, then I'll probably be able to come up with something Elvis, but I like the pressure when you text me something and I have to think of something quickly.
Yeah, you're very good at that. We went to the Apple store yesterday.
Oh.
Saw Mark Morrison.
Yeah, returning a Mac.
Returning a Mac.
Have you? Well, that was where you were going, right? Yeah.
Yeah, that's good. Amazing.
Thank God. Now, do you like? Have you ever seen a comedian called? What's his name? Jeremy Vine's brother, Tim Vine.
No.
All right, Tim Vine is Jeremy Vine's, let's say, younger brother. You know Jeremy Vine that does like the radio and
I've got his book.
Have you? The novel.
I think
He's just written a novel.
I think he's got a joke book.
Tim Vine or Jeremy Vine.
Oh no, then maybe that's Tim Vine's joke.
Yeah, Tim Vine.
Book.
Yeah, all one-liners. Yeah, all one-liners. Yeah,
I haven't read it yet
because it sounds like you're setting up a joke.
No,
I've only read one line.
Shortest book in the world.
One-liners. Very good.
What, you were going to tell us a joke?
No, I was just saying you'd like him because he constantly tells jokes like that. Doesn't stop.
Love him.
Right then. I can't think of a one-liner.
Come on, Mizey. What's your favourite joke? What's your favourite dad joke?
Well, you know what? Actually, I think probably my favourite dad jokes is when you were coming up with those replacement chocolates over like band names. So like Skittle Mix. And that was funny.
Another Revel.
Another Revel.
Not the coffee one, though. I've thought of my favourite one, but it's one I pull out of the bag for whenever I'm stuck and cornered in a... not that
I'm not
I get cornered
trying to corner
much.
You.
Yeah, when someone comes up to me in the street.
Tell us a joke, or...
So my mum didn't believe that I had a bicycle made of spaghetti and till I rode past her. Till I rode past her. I kind of fluffed the line, didn't I? I said past her because I was trying to be a bit middle class. And then it turned out I was riding a penny farthing.
That was good.
I tell too many jokes about pasta sometimes and people leave me alone, which makes me feel kind of lonely.
Oh, God.
Oh, God.
Hey, I used to have a pizza place. I used to run a pizza place, but it folded. It's now a cannelloni place. No, cannelloni. Is that what cannelloni is? It's like a pizza in half, right? It's like a Cornish pasty. Is that a cannelloni?
No, I think it's calzone. Is
that calzone?
It's now a it's now a calzone joint. Yeah, that's the joke.
Cannelloni.
Yeah. That's like the big tubes, isn't it? Cannelloni.
Yeah, I think so. I think they're either beans or pasta, either or.
And that's cannellini.
Cannellini.
That's cannellini. They're beans. Cannelloni's pasta. It's not. That's not a joke. That's just true.
Right. Yeah. Cannellini beans. Yeah.
Yeah.
Got that.
Sarah and I were going to Pizza Express yesterday, and there was a terrible situation in that this gentleman. We were going into the car park, NCP, and this guy was run over, as a car reversed out of the parking space. Police were appealing for the driver to come forward.
I love the way I thought it was a pizza joke, but you just took it to another one.
Well, we moved it.
You moved it on. It's funny because I think I saw you in that Pizza Express, and I was waiting ages for mine. Yours arrived quickly, and I said to the waiter, "Will my pizza be long?" He said, "No, it'll be round like everyone else's." Went into a fish and chip shop the other day. I said, "I'll have fish and chips twice." He said, "I heard you the first time."
I've been having internet problems recently. Just thinking about food. Just trying to, you know, when you get your passwords and you can't remember your passwords and there's always a problem with it. Anyway, I put one in the other day. I thought it's bound to be original. I put beef stew. It came back. Password is not strong enough.
Okay. Can we stop that now?
Yeah.
Can we stop this now? Because this isn't the right podcast.
I love that.
I think that's really
I'm so inspired by you guys. Thank you for that.
Well, let's start with the questions then. Right. Misey ladies first. Fear or faith?
I would actually say both. I can't lie. I feel there's like different strengths of fear. The fear that can cripple you and then the fear that motivates you. And I'm actually quite motivated by fear.
That's interesting.
And then that leads into faith, really. I feel like faith is just something that you always kind of have within, that belief within yourself. But yeah, definitely fear and faith for me.
The thing that I found about the answers on these questions, because they're very polar opposites, so division and connection and nature and nurture, is that actually I think there is a place, like you said, Misey, in the middle that is the sweet spot of all of this.
Yeah.
It's not about one way or the other. I think it's right in the middle. I think it's called the mandala or the mandola, where it's two circles which meet and there's this place in the middle that is of absolute clarity.
Yeah, a little bit of fear.
So I agree with that. I agree with that. A little bit of everything. Ricky, how much is enough?
Should have thought about this, shouldn't I? All right, how much is enough? Well, in my experience, thinking about... Let's not talk about it in physical monetary terms. I'm thinking about it in more kind of like spiritual terms or ambition terms. And think it always is and always maybe should be just out of reach, because if you ever, it's like the fog or rainbows, you can't, you know, you can see fog and you go, oh, it's really thick over there, and when you go over there you think, oh, it was thicker where I was. So you kind of like, it's always out of reach, which is a great thing, because if you ever had enough, you'd be screwed. It's like, I don't think you know, you think to yourself, like, you've done up your house dead nice, and I'm about to do mine. And the ambition is, you think that one day you'll sit in a leather chair, sit back and go, it's done. And the reality is, it will never be done.
Yeah.
Because it's a moving target. So enough is a moving target.
Yeah, I love that.
I talked to my lawyer the other day about, I was worried about loads of stuff, money. And he went, he represents a famous singer. I won't tell you who it is, but he's the singer in Coldplay, right? And he goes, if you're worried about, you know, how much your parking permit is, he's worried about his yacht permit. And if you're worried about the mortgage on one house, he's more worried about it on 15 houses. And he goes, he has exactly the same worries as you. They're just on a different level. But he's earning a lot more, so it's bigger. He's got bigger problems. So it's kind of like, I found that really interesting to think that you're never going to be like, oh, I'm sorted now, I've got enough, because you'll be like a gas. You'll fill the situation you're in with, you know, stuff and worries.
That's a beautiful way of putting it. Simon Armitage, when he was on, I said, how much is enough? And he said, £1,000. I thought you were going to come with something similar.
But how much is enough? Yeah.
You went, he said, pretty much £1,000 will cover it. Whatever you need. 1,000 will do it.
I love it.
Yeah, I suppose you can get a car. a computer.
Can you get pretty much everything for a grand, can't you?
Yeah.
Something that popped into my head as you were talking, Ricky, was when you were saying about...
What are you having for lunch? You just wandered. Something that popped into my head was another joke. I wasn't listening.
It was a profound saying that someone said when we think about, you know, getting to that next stage and all the other things. It was, the grass is always greener where you water it.
That's a lovely thought.
It's a lovely thing, isn't it? Mm. It's not actually on the other side of the fence, after all. Mizey, do we really care?
Do we really care? I feel like by nature we do. I feel like we are here on this earth to love and to care for each other and to be kind. But sometimes I do feel like there can be, you can wonder, do we actually really care? I feel like with everything that happens with like social media, like it's so fast paced, there's so much like news that comes out like every single day. It's like one thing happens and then it's gone again. It's like, you know, another tragedy happens, then you kind of forget about it because it's so fast paced. And I feel like, especially because, like, I don't know, I'm a city girl, so I've been in London, Croydon for all my life, and I don't know, it's just like one thing happens and then it kind of goes. So at times I do wonder, like, do we really care? Do we really learn and from our mistakes and like learn from that and try to be better? You know, there's a lot of issue in the world. A lot's come up, especially in 2020, 2021. So much has been revealed, stuff that I wouldn't have even dreamed of. COVID with BLM, all of that stuff. So yeah, I feel like it's by our nature to care, but sometimes I do question with the fast pacedness of everything, like, when are we implementing that change? Are we actually doing it? Are we creating action? Are we like going forward? Do you know what I mean?
Really good point. Are we sometimes relieving guilt by being charitable? It's a really difficult.
There's an element of, you know, when you, it's understandable, you shouldn't be a guilty about it, but you know, you get care fatigue.
Yeah.
Where you think to yourself, this is actually too much. And then I was worried about that the other day because I thought, how come everyone's, there was one particular thing and everyone was going crazy about it. And I started to worry that I wasn't caring as much as I should be caring compared to everyone else that was tweeting about how it had affected them. I was thinking, what's wrong with me? Am I not empathetic enough? And then I thought, the fact that I'm worried about that means that I really do care, because it means that I was worried about not being caring, which in itself brings you full circle and means you care.
Yeah.
But, you know, a lot of people do kind of over-egg the pudding with their caring sometimes, since social media has taken off and every day there's a new cause. And you think to yourself, you know, there's, you know, 2 million people dying of hunger every year. And someone on Tipping Point has got a cat charity. I'm like, what are you doing? Anyway, so I don't know where I'm going with that. I was just saying that I wanted to talk about care fatigue and the fact that sometimes it worries you.
It's really important that.
This is an interesting one for you, Ricky, because you've been, I would say it's fair to say that for many years you've, in a great way, been defined by a name, the name of your band. But you've now... I'm not trying to lead you to talk about that, but you are now a household name in your own right through presenting, through being an author, through being a presenter, the podcaster, all the many facets of your personality. So you're a very good person to ask the question, what's in a name?
What's in a name? I'll start with the simple thing. It's what you make it, really, because when we first started... we really cared about what we were going to call ourselves and we were really worried about it. And then eventually we couldn't agree what we were going to be called. So we all, and because we argued and argued and argued and we let someone else decide. And then we just all, none of us really liked it, but we all just went, all right, let's just go with that. And it really worked. And a name can change into something else. One of the biggest bands in the world is called Oasis, which is possibly the worst band name. Oh, God, I'm going to get loads of stick for that then. But it's not a great band name, is it? And ours, we just liked it because we knew a guy that played for the football team Kaizer Chiefs in South Africa, Lucas Radebe. And so we knew him and we thought it was quite kind of cool, but we never thought we were going to get as big as we got. So, and then we started to worry about the fact we'd stolen a name from a football team, and then they invited us to go and play with them, which was, I mean, I only had a pair of Converse. It was awful. But so we played with them. And anyway, I'm changing the subject. What's in a name? It's the name's what you make it, you know. So not a lot, I don't think.
Mm. Good answer. Maisie, why are we divided when we're so connected?
Oh, God. Why are we divided? I think just environment, really, to be honest. I feel like a lot of us don't, I mean, all of us, when we're born, we don't choose where we're born. And I think, especially even with like beliefs, I mean, for even for beliefs, like we there's some beliefs as we're born that we don't choose. We don't have a choice in choosing. And I feel like we're connected in the sense of, like, of course, we're all humans and we're, you know, I honestly do feel like we're here to love and to care and to be kind and to give and to be giving. But I feel like sometimes we are almost disillusioned and we think that we have to compete against each other when really the thing is that we actually need to come together. Like, we need to come together and connect because we actually have so much, we all have so much in common. We all have so much in common, although we may have like lived through different lives and have gone and like been, you know, we've grown up in different worlds. You know, we're all human, we're all connected, and, you know, we all experience feelings of happiness, sadness, you know, being upset, you know, jealousy, you know, we all experience all of those feelings. I just feel like, you know, it's really to do with the environment and like how we are conditioned to think and yeah, everything outside of us, everything externally. If we just kind of maybe looked more within and think, you know, like we're all very similar, we're all the same, then maybe there'd be less division.
One of life's biggest frustrations is meeting someone that you don't like, because as a rule, generally, everyone's all right when you meet them. I mean, because there's certain pop stars that I've actively detested, and then you meet them and you go, "Oh, I can't even hate them anymore. They're all right." Don't take that away from me. So yeah, we connect in different ways now. You connect over the internet, which is like road rage. You can think what you want for as long as possible, you know, and you make your own bubbles, which we know we do, which is a shame. And you get trapped in that and think that anything outside that is bad. Whereas, you know, it's not always that bad. Of course, there are some exceptions to the rule. Some people you do meet and they are absolute rotten.
Did you both think in lockdown that through obviously seeing way less people, that you actually focused on the people that were closest to you and that you felt that your immediate relationships blossom? And moving forward, do you feel that you will have a smaller group of friends because you'll be thinking, actually, I'm going to not spread myself too thinly around the billions of people that, I mean, it's slightly different for you too, because you're...
Well, no, superstars, but... I've never been that social, so it hasn't really affected me in any way. But what I have noticed is that now I forget there's friends I have that I've never met because of social media. Someone says, "Oh, do you know so-and-so?" I'll say, "Oh, yeah, they're my mate." And I realised we've never actually met. I just followed them on Twitter and then we got chatting and then now we message each other and you go, "God, I've never met this person. Will it be really awkward? I mean, they're weird in real life." All right, that's weird. But no, I did say the other day I was looking forward to having people staying over the house again. You know, that'd be nice.
Yeah, I agree. Rick, how do we find our truth?
Oh, come on, think of a Simon Armitage one that'll get me out of jail. £1,000. I'll buy a truth.
Yeah.
What was it? How do we find our truth?
Yeah.
I think I'm going to just use an analogy, which is the only way I can explain it, but it, I mean it on a bigger scale than this. When we first started as a band or as a performer, I tried to like go and see people and see what they did that I liked. And it made me and thought, all right, what do I like about this? And that just makes you like a watered down version of lots of different things. Whereas if you go and see musicians and listen to music and think what it is you don't like, if you apply everything you don't like to what you do, whatever's left is truly you.
Wow.
Without copying something, without looking for someone else's reality, you wheedle out your own by just putting aside the things that you don't want to be, and eventually you'll be the thing you do without knowing it.
Yeah.
That's good.
Does that make sense?
That's powerful, yeah.
Right, okay.
You didn't give me the list, though, when we started working together, Ricky.
The list?
The things you didn't like. You just thought, I'll just leave him, and if he plays or does anything I don't like, then it'd be like a lamb to the slaughter in front of the whole band.
I think it was, wasn't it just you and me at the beginning?
Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
Were you just being polite because you didn't show me the list?
I don't have a list. It's just I'm not like, you'll go in my book.
No, not you, but I wanted to hear the
other
things.
I
see this band in Bradford and they played major seven chords, so I've just...
Oh, right. No, I'm not that specific.
It's not a literal list.
No, not a literal list. I think it's more about, you know, with me, I was talking about not like things they do actually like, oh, you know, why did they start with the chorus? I'm thinking more about the whole vibe of something. What is it I don't like? And I tried for so long to try and be in a cool band. I realised that it wasn't as much fun as it was just really enjoying being in a band. And I used to find it quite depressing when you'd see kids in a new band at the NME Awards, and you could tell on the inside they were bubbling and fizzing with, this is the best day of my life, but on the outside were just trying to look like they didn't want to be there. And we must have been the most annoying group of people in the world when we turned up, because we just like bounced in going, this is amazing, yeah, woohoo! Yeah, and it must have been so annoying to all the other bands who you know, were cool.
There's a coolness to authenticity, though, isn't there? You know, when you just really are being yourself, and I think that that's what you guys have always been, and that makes you cool to me.
It's really hard to not achieve that without just having age achieve it. It's really hard to speed that process up. It's like, you know, when I was, until I was about 20, I thought the idea of being in a room and somebody, or my trousers falling down, would have been the worst thing in the world. But now I'm age 43, I couldn't give a shit who sees my willy. It wouldn't bother me, right? So, and I think that you can't speed that up. It just happens. I'm not going to do it now. I know it's a podcast.
Oh my god, no! Please,
but you know, it's not like not that kind of podcast.
No, it's not a podcast.
A podcast.
It's not a podcast.
It's not a podcast. Oh, podcast. Oh god, love that.
Dad podcast.
Well, this takes on a weird angle now, because why is it I'm going to say, and I've got this image that I can't get out of my head, what's the cost of freedom?
What's the cost of freedom?
It's not £1,000 to get the image of what Ricky just said out of your mind.
I'm trying to erase that right now as we speak. What's the cost of freedom? I don't know what the cost of freedom is. I really don't know. I don't know how much that is. I think freedom, what is that? I don't know about it. I think my whole thing is I have an aim in my life that I want to eventually be free of my mind. And because the mind is such a clever but amazing but also mad place with a lot of voices, like, and I think to be free of the mind, like, that would be such a, you can't even put money on it because it's something you can only dream of, to be free of the mind. So I don't know whether there's a cost to it. I don't know how much that cost did. It could be £1,000. Like, I don't know.
It gets me thinking when I think about this question of how lucky we are as creatives to have the freedom of being lost in art. Do you both feel that?
Yeah, like...
Yeah, sometimes. So, right, so, I know, because all I'm thinking about this week, right, I finished something, a book, right, and I thought it was done. And then someone read it and they went, I think you should make these changes. And I was a bit like, I finished it. I thought it was perfect. I made the changes and they said, oh, these changes are fantastic. Now, how do you feel about this new character you've done? How about changing it all from their perspective? And I've been like, and half of you thinks, are they having an opinion because I've asked for an opinion? Because what I really asked for when I asked for opinion was, this is brilliant. It doesn't need changing. I didn't want an opinion. I wanted just to be said, yes, it's done. Yeah. But I didn't. And now I'm kind of like, I'm putting it aside for a few days because if I don't want to get annoyed with it and I don't, and they might be right or I might have to argue with it. And I haven't decided yet.
I blame you, Ricky. You will have
everybody does.
You will have sent the transcript to this person. And said, what do you think?
No, what, yeah.
What you should have said was, tell me which bit you like best.
You know, I did actually send...
You opened yourself up.
I sent it to my favourite author, right? And they said the best thing, and it's the cleverest thing, and I'm going to say it. If anyone ever gives me a demo tape or anything like that, or anything for me to read, I'm always going to say the thing he said. Which was, if you sent it to me, you must think it's pretty good. I'll read it when it's out. So if someone sends, so Fraser, if someone sends you a demo, just go, because they'll write a letter saying, I think you're amazing. I love everything you've done. I think, you know, this track, that track, you're my hero. Just say, well, if I'm your hero and you sent it to me, then it's ready.
That's amazing.
Which is a great answer because it gets you
out
a lot
of shit.
It does. And those things, you know, it's very difficult because what's the context? What do people really want you to say? I mean,
no, they want to say, this is amazing. Here's £1 million. Yeah. And I'm going to manage you and take you to the top. And what they don't realize is that if you could do that, you'd be doing it for yourself every day. Do you know what I mean? If you had that kind of power, you'd be just doing it all the time.
Yeah. That's the thing. Interesting. Question 8, Ricky, is it too late to save the planet?
No, not at all. I mean, it's probably too late to save humanity, but the planet will always be a planet. Mm-hmm. We might not be on it. Does it matter, really, at the end of the day? We're kind of just parasites. So the planet will always find a way to survive.
Yeah.
But I don't think we will.
That's what Catherine Friedrich said on the record. And really? Many a... like-minded, learned guest, such as yourselves.
Clearly, I'm just repeating. No,
you're not. You said it in a different way.
Okay.
Mizey, what happens next?
In life or right now? About what I'm going to do right now? What happens next?
You choose.
Well...
Your choice.
I mean, I'm going to make a courgette pasta after this.
Nice.
With a bit of pancetta.
Ricky, you must have a joke about that.
I don't have no joke.
You've got more pasta-based jokes than I've known anyone, Tim Vine included. Is just... You almost did a whole show about pasta.
Yeah. Someone said something the other day I thought was quite good about pasta. They said, if you have a lasagna and you put another lasagna on top of it, you've still only got one lasagna. This is true.
It is true.
Yeah.
So that happens next. Courgette pasta.
That's what happens next. I'm just going to, you know.
Well, I think you're right in saying courgette pasta because what happens next is basically, that's mind-bogglingly exciting and terrifying that whatever happens next is what could be anything. I could go to the shops and have a fab, and I could enjoy the fab, or I could be run over.
Yeah.
Sorry, that was dark, but you know, I like you know, but you know, anything could happen. I could decide to do anything now.
Moment to moment,
and I'd do it. It'd be, so what happens next is terrifying and exciting.
Yeah,
and that makes us human.
Were you with your courgette pasta? Is that more like a pasta bake, or will you be having? Will it's no. like a cheese sauce?
I made the same courgette pasta the day before yesterday, because my boyfriend's a chef, so. I really want to master this courgette pasta because it was actually recommended from a friend who works in a Michelin star restaurant in Switzerland. So I've just been wanting to just get the balance right. I missed the basil out. This time I'm adding basil, so I'm going to get it right. Going to add the garlic in, get the salt and pepper
give it time.
In, give it time. I've got it all laid out there as well.
Give it time. Very good.
got it laid out there. And I just want to make it, I just want to make a better pasta. So every time I make it, it's better than the last time. Because that's really my aim, to make great dishes that make me feel happy.
But the graph of the pasta getting better will do this. And I think your enjoyment of it due to getting bored of it will do this. So there'll be one moment, I think it's called, I can't remember the word you said earlier, what was that thing about your Venn diagram that you tried to say? Your circle?
Mandola.
Mandola. There'll be a sweet spot where your enjoyment of it is meeting the quality of it. And after that, it's over.
Yeah, it will be over. But for now.
But luckily, there's lots of different types of pasta.
Yeah. I've done something this year. Now, this does sound like a joke. I promise you it's not. Although if you were to look at it, you'd think it was a joke. I set about this year to do 365 self-portraits. Okay?
Yeah.
So every morning I take a picture of my face on my phone, put it there. I have a book, 365 pages in it, and I do a self-portrait every single day. It hasn't so far got any better. And I'm actually thinking of calling the series to this point, Why the Long Face?
Right. Is that because you...
But the proportions are so out. I mean, can you help me?
You know, I have a children's television show about art, which is very successful. I could teach you how to do faces, yeah. Easy. Easiest thing in the world to draw.
Do you need to come round or...?
No, I can do it on Zoom, but I'd like to come round because then we'll get some paints out and it'll be fun. Do it in the garden.
We'll do that then. I'll hold you to
where
that.
Where are you putting the eyes? The eyes are
the eyes are in the middle,
down.
I know that, I don't know, sometimes they're too far away, sometimes too close together. My mum warned me about people like that. the ears, yeah. But I tell you what, at this point, I've got to dig in at this point because I'm 45 in, which is 320 to go. But I think it could be a book.
I think it'd be a great book.
To see, literally, 365 days, self-portrait. I mean, literally...
I think it should be a sticker book. I think you should be able to peel them all out.
Oh, okay.
You should be able to peel your face out at each page and stick it on something.
Face peeling. Isn't that a treatment?
Yeah. Hey, I tell you what, I've never wanted to go to a spa before, but the other day I thought to myself, what would I like to do? Because my friend... Craig, he said, it's not Craig David, my friend Craig Rose, he's a seaweed farmer, and he's my best man, and he said, what do you want to do on your stag do? And I said, I don't care what we do, as long as it's just you and me. I don't want to have any other people there.
Okay.
Just you and me, we've devised a men do, instead of it's like a hen do.
Men do.
Basically, we're going to dress up, there was a TV show, do you remember the TV show... The Persuaders.
Yeah.
So we're going to dress up like Roger Moore and Tony Curtis and go off in a sports car to a spa.
I love
Amazing.
That.
And then we're going to have a spa, then get in our fluffy robes and watch a few episodes of The Persuaders in their little cinema room.
Mm.
Brilliant.
Sounds like a good night out.
It's an amazing night
fantastic.
Out.
Yeah.
You could pave the way for stag do's of the future, Ricky. You know, it's no longer about cling film and... Yeah. 15 pints of Tennent's.
Yeah, I want to drink champagne out of a, what is it called? A coupe. Is that what you call it? You know, with a robe.
Yeah.
Maybe a brandy like that. Yeah. When can I just keep talking? Sorry. It's just reminds me. My friend Ollie, he taught me this trick when he was ever traveling, and I started doing it as well. He'd have a thing called the Michael Douglas Hour, and I don't know why it was called that, but it kind of made sense. And I started doing it where you get into a hotel, you'd clean yourself to the cleanest. You'd use every product, even the shower cap, even you know everything. Then you'd have the TV on, usually with some kind of like CNN rolling news. Then stand in your robe at the window or on the balcony if you've got one, having a brandy. And he said that for him on his own, doing his Michael Douglas Hour,
just
made traveling amazing. And I've tried it and it is fantastic.
What about if you're in a travel lodge?
You can yeah, well, they don't really have brandy in the minibar, do they?
No. I'm just trying to think of, I guess you could open the window.
Yeah, but they don't open.
I don't know. They don't. I didn't mean to, you know. But ultimately, when you were saying it, I was thinking about the open bath in the middle of the, you know, as it should be. But then I did, there's something part of my mind was just thinking, yeah, but...
Travel lodge.
There's a travel lodge off the A1 that, I don't know.
You know when you get into a hotel and you get a room and it's got a window, but it's one of those windows to look in on, like, the... you know, that it, and you're saying, well, it's not looking outside, it's looking on into somewhere with a roof. Yeah. And that, I find that so claustrophobic. And I have to change rooms all the time. I got the nickname of Lawrence Llewellyn Bowen in our band because I was always changing rooms in hotels.
Right. You changed rooms when we were working together.
Did I?
You changed houses. You were like, I'm not staying here. I want to stay in yours. Do you remember?
No, I don't.
Well, you did. And then watched Breaking Bad together and then we came down to the river.
I did, yeah. Yeah. That was good.
You see?
I wasn't going to stay there.
Thinking of you in hotels, Ricky... How many hotels do you think you've stayed in your life? I mean, you are a well-toured
rock god,
aren't you?
Charlie Watts from the Rolling Stones, he has done a much the same as your portrait thing, he has done a sketch of every room he's ever slept in.
Wow.
And he's never released it as a book, which tells you a lot, Fraser, about your idea. I'm joking. No, but I find that quite interesting. But I'd buy that coffee table book. By Charlie Watts.
That'll be good, yeah.
But he's probably stayed in a lot more than I have. But I really like hotels. I did my dissertation at art college on hotels.
Well, put the energy out into the universe and then you've become one of the most well-travelled
I've done a bit of travel. I've done a bit of travel writing as well, which I like a lot. Because you don't actually do it. I don't do anything until I get home.
Is that going to be a book that comes out?
No, I just do it for I've done it for Mr. and Mrs. Smith. This is quite good because it's anonymous. It's a bit of an outlet for some creativity, being a bit funny.
Your books are... Was the book that you were talking about earlier the book that I might know about?
Yeah, it is that one, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, lots changed. There's all those... The 18 stories are the same, but the bits that link it, it's better, but they want to make it even better, and I'm a bit like... And the weirdest thing is, that's the main book, and the other books I've written to surround it, part of the same universe, they're all great. And I'm thinking, well...
no changes.
No changes.
Right.
All my, you know, because I do these little 10,000 word ones, and they're going, these are brilliant. But the main one, but it feels a little bit like, you know, when you write an album and the record label get obsessed with the single to the point where you lose focus on what it was that made it special in the beginning because it's been polished too much. But everything else around it, they go, oh, this is great. But the single has to, how about we get this guy to mix it? And you're going, well, it seems to be getting worse and becoming my least favourite of the songs on the record. Because it doesn't have
as
that
long as you can come back to the first thing. But, Ricky, nature or nurture?
As we all know, it is a mixture of the both. You know when you're watching a Channel 5 documentary about serial killers and they say, is it nature or is it nurture? It's like, well, it's both. It's you don't have to ask the question anymore. It's both. You know.
Let's leave that at that then.
Yeah, well, you know, people have switches in their heads that are switched differently to other people. And sometimes that gets brought out by their upbringing and sometimes it doesn't. So, yeah, it's a mixture of both, totally.
Agreed.
Maisie, what matters most?
What matters most?
Can I just say, she's getting the hardest one.
It's just ladies first and then alternate.
Right. I'm so pleased, by the way, Maisie. It's, what matters most? Nature or nurture? Yeah.
Well, it could be courgette pasta.
It could be. Do you know what? I've actually been thinking about this just even just in, like, especially with, like, 2020 and 2021, and I've just been going through just such a huge transition period of myself in general, and I think the thing that matters the most to me is that I am totally and completely authentic, and that I'm being absolutely truthful with myself and not putting anything on. And I think that is really, really what matters most, that I can freely be myself and who I am and not be ashamed of that, and just be present I really think that's really what matters most, to be myself and to be authentic.
That is a wonderful answer. You know, Ricky, Maisie and I met over a year ago, where I was picked with one of your other good friends, David Arnold.
Oh,
and
right, yeah.
Nile Rodgers and Camille to be a mentor for an artist. I was lucky to be paired with Maisie. And we put our flag in the sand, didn't we, Maisie? And we said we're going to speak to each other for an hour a week. And the conversations we've talked about lots of different things. And you won the Ivor Novello Award, which is incredible. And now we've started working together on a kind of official capacity, in that I am and my team are your label. And to hear you say that about being authentic is being the most important thing to you. Because I've seen in this past year how you have come so far.
Thank you.
In terms of your personality and your art and your creativity and your personality. So
thank you very much.
Beautiful to hear. Ricky.
Yep.
Last question.
Yeah.
What is love?
That's a big question. All right. So it's kind of, I think it goes into the last question as well. So what matters most is that it changes all the time. And it's only recently that I've realized that I don't need that much. You don't need anything. There are basic human needs like shelter and food and, you know, stuff like that. But there's weirder human needs that aren't as, you can't put your finger on it, but love is the main one, I think. There you go. It's a basic human need. That's love. There you go.
Love it. Beautiful.
A BHN.
That sounds like a biscuit.
What is love? It's a biscuit. There you go. And if you had to choose your favourite, it would be the Fox's Golden Crunch Cream.
Oh, yeah.
Have you had
Can
those?
You still get those?
Yeah. I only found out about them recently, and I'm livid that I've only just found out about them.
Livid.
I've never been a biscuit guy.
You must
guy.
Have had those in Leeds when you were growing up.
No, I had no interest in biscuits before. But as I say, things change. Life changes. People change. Interest rates fluctuate.
Yeah. What? Hang on a minute. You didn't eat biscuits at all when you were a kid?
I mean, not really. No, I was just more of a crisp kind of guy.
Yeah. Okay. Maisie, did you?
Eat biscuits?
Were you a biscuit eater? Yeah.
Oh, God. I was more than just a eater when I was growing up. I mean, I was eating, I used to go to every day after school in secondary. My dad used to take me to Lundis on the way to school and on the way back from school. And I used to go in and get at least 5 different types of chocolates or biscuits. I'd get like a Nutri-Grain, I'd get Kinder Bueno, I'd get some custard creams, I'd get all sorts. So I was a huge...
All sorts?
Yeah, all sorts. I was a big, big biscuit eater, but now I'm gluten-free, so I've got to be...
Oh, no.
I'm quite, you know, I can only get the gluten-free section biscuits, which are very good, by the way.
Are they?
Yeah, the like, but the expensive ones, like the kind of like the deluxe, the kind of taste the difference ones that you get from Tesco.
But they don't, do they not do like chocolate hobnobs, gluten-free?
They do, only selected places though. I've done my research.
Right.
Yeah.
I like it when it makes it harder to enjoy life, because then you realise that it's not all handed to you. You know, because I stopped having milk, it's made my life better. And now I quite like having that thing that stops me from just having anything I want. Do you know?
Yeah.
Less limitations.
I know what you mean, actually. Yeah.
Ricky, what was that thing when we were working together? You used to eat this biscuit.
Belvita breakfast biscuits.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was when I was trying to change my body shape. And I did succeed in that. I like them because... I didn't even like them, but I used to eat not a lot of them, but it was to keep me like from fainting in the studio.
I used to have one and then run a very fast 10 kilometers down the towpath, come back, write some music. What was it called again?
A Belvita breakfast biscuit.
They're great. Right. They're really good.
Yeah, they're quite good.
Especially the chocolate chip ones.
Yeah, that's the one I used to like. Oh, they're really nice. And the chocolate chip ones had the same calories as the ones without the chocolate chips. Plain.
How does that work?
I invented a diet which I can't endorse it. I can't tell you to do it because it might be terribly bad for you, but I called it the 1-2-3-4 diet.
Yeah.
And it's based on this: breakfast 200 calories, lunch 3, but between two, so it can be, you can have 280 calories, but anything that starts with a 2, right? So 200 to 300, then lunch 300 calories to 400. And then dinner, 400 to 500 calories. And then snacks, you can have 100. And that's about, let's work it out, 1,200 calories, which isn't a lot. But if I'm trying to get ready for going on telly, if I do that for 3 weeks, I'm at my fighting weight. And I enjoy overindulging and I enjoy underindulging. I just don't enjoy being normal.
That's good. I'm going to try that because I'm not ashamed to say that I put on a few pounds, as a lot of people did over lockdown. So I went to the doctor and said, you know, have you got any help for this? He said, yeah, I will give you a new diet, which actually I don't think is as good as yours, Ricky, but I was in the doctor's office. He should know what he's talking about. I said, what is this diet? He goes, well, just eat, don't eat anything fatty. I said, what, like crisps and chips? He goes, no, just don't eat anything fatty.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Ricky.
I went to a shop and said, can I have a Kit Kat Chunky? And he went, you can have a Kit Kat, but don't call me Chunky.
I went back to the doctor because I didn't like that fatty diet. Mm. And I said, have you got any exercise for me? Because, you know, exercising in lockdown has been hard as well. He goes, yeah, just shake your head. I said, well, how many times a day? He goes, just whenever anyone offers you some food.
Funny.
Guys. Yeah.
Yes.
I could go on.
I know you could.
Could go on.
And you probably will. I think in your book of your portraits, every day underneath your portrait, you need a one-liner.
One-liner?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. Why the long face? 365 times.
Yeah.
Guys, thank you so much.
Thank you.
This has been...
No, thank you. It's been great to see you all.
So much fun.
So fun to see you.
Brilliant answers and so many new jokes. Can't ask for anything more.
So many old jokes.
Yeah, but the old ones are the best. Because the old ones just keep, they don't disappear, do they? They are the old ones because they're the best. That was so much fun. Apologies for all the dad jokes, but there's something about being around Ricky that always brings out my northern comedian alter ego. And I also have to point out, as a disclaimer,
Because whenever I tell a joke, everyone always says, how come you're laughing at your own jokes more than anybody else? In my defense, I have to say that I haven't made the joke up, so I'm only appreciating someone else's skills and not my own. So shout out to all the great comedians that have shared their humour, past and present, and my dad joke WhatsApp group, Eggy, Baz, Adam, Colin, Neil and Ash, who furnish me with the most terrible jokes on a daily basis. If you haven't checked it out already, check out 12 Questions by me, Fraser T. Smith, aka Future Utopia, available on all the major streaming services. And don't forget to subscribe and like this podcast. Also, ask yourself the 12 questions, ask other people the 12 questions. I put this record out to stir debate and hopefully create change. So why don't you send us your answers to the 12 questions on Instagram and Twitter, at The Future Utopia. Last but not least, a massive shout out to Becky Voice at the Tape Agency and my management crew, Phil, Kate, Jasmine and Josh at 360 for helping make this podcast happen. Thank you so much for listening. Thanks again to Ricky and Mizey for sharing their brilliance on this episode. See you next time, and until then, let's make the future a utopia.